When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Coaches Network. Today, I've got a very special guest with me, and the topic's a bit different, but we're going to go there and we'll see how it goes. I've got Professor Michael Hornberger with me. Michael, how are you today?
Great. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for being with me. And Michael, just to kind of give the listeners a bit of a backdrop around the world of sport. I'm curious, as coaches, in regards to support.
Yeah, sure. You know, physical activity and exercise or sport is hugely important for our brain fitness. So that's already great. You're covering already a lot with that. And because we know that physical activity is, as I said, uses the brain quite a lot and therefore really provides it a lot of nutrients and oxygen. It's a major, major glucose and oxygen user in the body. It only has 2% of our body weight, but uses 20% of oxygen and glucose. So it's a massive, massive, you know, consumer, everything we do, and therefore how we basically feed our body and our brain and how we exercise. The key thing is, I think, for in particular, when you coach people that, you know, these will be fairly fit people. What we have mostly issues is once people hit middle age, what happens after that? Because most people start to slow down their physical activity. And that's actually when you need it the most. And that's what we see for aging. And people become much more sedentary. While what has been shown is that the more active you are, the better your brain health is. So being physically active and, you know, hitting those milestones, like Public Health England has certain milestones for people to hit, and which we can talk about maybe later, is really important to have a healthy brain. And people really underestimate this hugely. They think doing it crosswords is keeping their brain fit. And I'm very happy for you to do crosswords. That's always a good thing to do if you want to do that. But being physically fit helps you much, much more, and has shown the more physically fit you stay, you reduce the chances of any diseases, including dementia, cancer, diabetes, by, you know, 30 to 40%. So it's a massive, massive impact. Yes. I guess for you, what you maybe, and I don't know how much, you know, I don't know much about coaching, but what you might need to take into account is for the brain fitness, for the psychological element and the mental health. Yeah. Again, I don't know what you do already over this, but there is the things. How do you keep people in a way that you create what we would call a resilient brain? So, and you can see that, of course, a lot with, you know, even professional sports nuts, which really crumble under the pressure which is piled up on them. How you create a kind of resilience to be mentally healthy and mentally strong to deal with those situations. And that's quite hard, of course, to train, because you really need to show people. Well, from our perspective, I think it's good to fail in that sense. So repeated failure is always a good thing, that people learn that failing from time to time is actually a good thing, because it's a learning opportunity. And therefore, that failure should not be feared. It's really something you should be after, that you can, therefore, especially for professional people, of course, that, you know, it's these 1 or 2% which might make a huge difference. You can still tweak them and really make people more resilient. And that would prepare them much better for any competition or any other stressful situation. That's what we always see. The people who are much more mentally health resilient usually do much, much better in those situations.
Sure. And I kind of just want to take you back to something you touched on before around this idea that physical, I guess, exercise and physical activity obviously supports brain health and fitness in that respect. Is there any, I guess, particular activities or types of movements or exercises that maybe promote a greater sense of health and benefit, health benefits within the brain?
So for the brain, the key is really cardiovascular activity. That's the major one that you have. If you have good cardiovascular health, you usually do very well. So your cardio. But I always say, of course, to the people we deal with, which is more the aging population, that strength exercises are as important, you know, and that's really, really key. And these strength exercises are much more than to avoiding falls or injuries, I think. And people very often, you know, I say this, the core strength can be such a critical part, which people always underestimate. You know, you can have lots of muscles on the outside, but if you don't have good core strength, of course, you can still be pushed over. But in terms of brain health, the cardiovascular health is cardiovascular fitness is key for that. So if you do any of the major cardiovascular, you know, like running, cycling, swimming, whatever, you know, in those your or football, like what you know you guys are doing, then you usually will be, your brain will be very healthy. Because the key is that the brain is so reliant on this blood supply. So if you have good cardiovascular fitness, you usually have good cardiovascular health, which impacts then as well on your brain health. And it's all about the blood vessels in the brain, which really provide those nutrients and the oxygen to the brain. Once the blood vessels are getting, you know, for example, blocked or, you know, they're getting more brittle, then you have a problem. But if, you, of course, you are very physically active, that doesn't happen.
Mm. So I guess, you know, essentially we're saying the more active we are generally, the better it is for the brain. So I guess, you know, one of the things you touched on, obviously, as we get older, that becomes more challenging. So I guess, are there any, I guess, shortcuts to kind of keeping on top of that? You know, not necessarily, you know, in some ways, what you're saying is really you're trying to avoid a sedentary lifestyle.
Absolutely. Yes.
As we do grow as up in, you know, a lot of us are based in office-based environments, maybe not always fortunate enough to be in an active, I guess, job. So what are some small little bits that people can maybe start to implement in their day-to-day lives? And then obviously from a different perspective as well, what are some of the things that maybe as coaches or practitioners we could think about doing within our practice that can help our athletes or young people, I guess, get an extra 1 or 2% in supporting them in developing their brain health?
Yeah, I think you said already the key word. I think for me, it's all about how do you incorporate as much in your daily life already? You know, there is, of course, the whole exercise element, and I do that myself, and that's great. But if you incorporate it into your everyday life, then you can boost yourself just by doing what you do anyway. And, you know, I have to say myself, of course, I do a desk job, you know, in sitting most days. So I have to be very, very careful with that. But what I've changed, for example, I cycle to work and cycle back, you know, and I see loads of people always wear suits and so on. But, you know, doesn't matter. You just get changed, you know, you cycle to work and cycle back. And with that, my daily routine has already changed hugely. And so do my kids. So I cycle them to school, cycle home, and, you know, do this as a kind of a general routine. The other key thing is, of course, you know, that people, if they sit a lot at desks these days, standing desks are a great option. It's not for everyone, but if people can use that, it makes a huge difference. So the whole sedentary behavior is really terrible for us, and evolutionary, we were never meant to be to do that. So I think in terms of for you, I think how you really need just to get people's the attitude that they are, you know, need to be as active as possible the whole day while having sufficient rest. And that's the balance, I guess, for you to strike. But then with that, the brain fitness will clearly come in terms of general brain fitness. Then you can start talking maybe more about specific brain training, which is sport related. And lots of this is about, you know, what people call sensory motor action. So how do you link best up your sensory system and your motor system, which most sports, that's what they really are about, you know, to be a quick reaction, be very, quick noticing what's going to happen and quick reaction to that and then perform accordingly. And there are actually a lot of systems out there now which are used to really provide people instant feedback and really get much, much better. And the controversy still is about whether it really translates into real life. And that's the key thing, you know. So you do, for example, virtual reality training. It really, you get much better at these training programs in terms of your brain fitness. But whether it really kind of changes your performance in real life from the scientific point of view, it's still, the jury is still out actually on that. And that's a really interesting topic because a lot of course, companies offer this now for brain training aspects. So this is one thing just to be a bit wary about and just know that it might not make as a big effect if you do the training in real life.
No, you make some great points. And obviously some of the resources that are out there, that there is organizations and companies, as you've mentioned there, that are starting to put some of these packages together and I guess look at collaborating with different people to kind of get this over across to athletes. But, and I'm just curious, you know, from a perspective of maybe someone who might be listening to this and it's maybe not from a, shall we say, a quote unquote elite or high performance setting where they may not have access to certain products or certain services and whatnot. Is there something that they could be doing on a day-to-day in their practice, that would help them, I guess, bridge some of those gaps?
Yeah, well, I think it will depend a lot on the sport, I guess, they want to be doing. But I think in general, whatever, I always say to people, you know, what they already like doing, just do more of that. That's already great. And lots of people, of course, blame they don't have time for this. It's really just making that time. And then for me, it's doing the cross sport kind of, as I said, some cardiovascular and some strength. If you're, you know, into, if you like yoga or Pilates, that's always great because it's also great for your mental health in terms of breathing and meditation. That's really, really, you know, then you cover a lot of aspects, even if you just do a very quick 10 minutes in the morning, can make a huge difference to your whole outlook to the day. And then have to add to this the cardiovascular element. And then just being as active as possible, walking, being sitting, not sitting around a lot, I think will make a big difference to you. You can do then other things, you know, which are much more specific, as I said, to do practice with whatever. If you have ball skills, for example, if you, you know, you're whatever, football or rugby player, there are loads of drills out there and they're already very well designed these days. But you can always combine this, of course, with other, you know, do the cross-discipline type sports. And that's really, it's always amazing if you do a different sport, how it actually can improve your own sport. And the same for your brain fitness, actually, because it's the different brain areas which you're stimulating with that. So in the brain, they're different. I don't know if how much I should go into this, but in the brain, we have specific areas specialized, for example, for your movement, for your sensory system. And they're very much arranged and along a very specific topography. And so it might mean that you have neighboring regions, which are really might actually boost each other. If you train, for example, some, you know, for example, if you're a footballer, you work mostly with your feet maybe, and then you do, for example, exercises which are much more with your hands. This might actually help your football playing as well because you're stimulating the brain areas which are just adjacent to your leg and foot, basically, brain areas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. I guess kind of just to kind of pick on that, a couple of things kind of started to, I guess, come to mind for me as questions or thoughts to consider. Firstly, you talk about different brain areas and I guess how they might contribute to one another. Is there a, I guess, in terms of brain health, brain fitness, and I guess being efficient and maximizing an opportunity for people to maybe develop and learn more, is there certain activities that will trigger certain parts of the brain to kind of allow for more, I guess, more retention of information, if that makes sense?
Well, it depends on your proficiency. So what we know is if you learn, for example, a new skill or a new sport, it will be very effortful at the beginning for any one of us, you know. I don't know, the classic for what we always use as an example for the students is learning to ride a bike, you know, which we all do as a children, you know. It's, if you think about it, it's extremely complex to learn that because it has a lot of motor movements, stability or vestibular system, loads of elements to it, you know, very difficult to learn. And it's very exhausting if you learn that as an adult, actually. Once you become proficient, then this learning basically becomes not conscious anymore, but subconscious. And that will really kind of move, therefore, in terms of the brain areas related to this. So there are brain areas which are much more for learning a new skill, and they are very exhausting for us, because once we learn that, this will be very hard. Then they move into this what where we become proficient at something, and it becomes more subconscious how we do things. And then there's a third level, which is really all the fine tuning. And this is really, I think, what the professionals are much more into, you know, where you really, it's very minor gains for what you, how you can train your brain. And those are the three stages. They all influence each other. And therefore, it's always good to learn something new, because it might actually boost your existing proficient skills, if that makes sense. So that's a classic, of course, in terms of cross training. You know, that's why it's so successful. It's not only for your body to use different muscle groups, but it also uses different parts of your brain in terms of the learning.
Mm. And I kind of, you know, just another kind of thing to kind of tail off the back of that. Thing. Is there? I'm sure there is. I'm curious to know, from a nutritional perspective, is there certain foods which will elicit better responses in terms of, I guess, from the brain, in terms of retention of information, and obviously just a general the well-being of the brain?
Yeah, nutrition is a huge topic, of course, as well. You know, in terms of nutrition, what the brain, where we can first, you know, everybody knows, I guess, that, you know, too much sugar, too much fat is not good for you. But the major one for the brain, which we're worried about, is also too much salt, and particularly because it increases the blood pressure. And blood pressure increases can actually damage some of the blood vessels in the brain. So you need to be quite careful in terms of salt consumption, especially for people who eat a lot of ready meals. Ready meals are very often packed with salt because for flavoring, that they get the most out of the flavoring. So those are the negative aspects. And everybody knows this, you know. You know, you shouldn't eat those sweets. You shouldn't eat those muffins. But we do. And I think for me, that's all fine as long as you have a good portion control in place. In terms of food which is good for the brain, there's actually a whole range of foods which are potentially good for the brain. But there are two major groups where there are is particularly shown to have a good impact. One is called the omega-3s. And these are kind of fats or oils which are really good for the brain. So they're the bad fats and the good fats. And omega-3 is, for example, the fats which are really, really good for the brain. It really helps it to regenerate the nerve cells, being much more kind of, as I said, being quicker at regenerating it for learning new things and making lists, but also lots of other vegetables, and you can look that up. Just be careful with supplements. Often they don't, well, studies have shown that they're not as effective actually as eating the natural food. So again, something to be aware of. The shortcuts, as you mentioned already before, very often the shortcuts turn out to be dead ends, not shortcuts. So one needs to be careful about that. For example, dark berries like strawberries, blueberries, also grapes, and also in wine, if taken in moderation, those really elements, they really boost nerve cell growth. That's really known for this. So for learning, really, really good. And so there's lots of very good scientific evidence showing that if you consume more of those, you actually, your brain will become much more switched on. But again, just be careful with all these, you know, supplements. Supplements, they can be very often not as effective as eating the right foods. And if you look that up, you can find loads of healthy, you know, everyday food everybody can buy, which is rich of those two elements. And that would really improve your brain fitness quite a lot. And in recent years, it has been moved away from certain food groups and has moved much more towards what diets are good. And the really good diet, which has been shown to be very effective for good cardiovascular health and brain health, the Mediterranean diet. And with that, I mean the classic Mediterranean diet, so which is, you know, fairly very little red meat, actually. And it's much more, if meat, than white meat. And it's usually more pulses and much more vegetables. And again, in more vegetables, you have loads of these polyphenols, oily fish again. And most of the fat, of course, comes from extra virgin olive oil, which is unsaturated fats and therefore very, very healthy for us. But clearly, this is something maybe some households to have. So you need to be quite carefully balanced it off. But if you after a healthy diet for your brain, then a Mediterranean diet is your best, basically, bet.
Mm. No, it's very interesting stuff. Then I kind of, just again, as you're talking, I'm just thinking that you know, about some of the ways in which we can have a contributing factor to athletes. In this case, I'm conscious now, is it to prime an athlete for greater retention ahead of the session and then during the session? Are there certain cues or triggers that maybe we can look out for, or that we can kind of push buttons on, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those are more psychological tactics than which you can use. I think one good way is to do, if you, for example, do different sessions or different kind of aspects in your training, to make them as distinct as possible, actually. And that usually helps retention a lot. The other, if retention is very good, if we're in a much more emotional receptive state. So if something is fun to do, people will really much better remember it usually, or when it's very sad. But I'm not sure you want to create a lot of sadness in the people you're training. That's not really good. But the emotional side, usually once we have, and we all have that, emotional events, you remember this much better in your life. And this is really, if you can use that somehow in making, for example, fun aspects or making something silly, everybody will remember that training because that's what you did. And they might remember therefore much better how you actually retain this. And it might mix things, of course, up, but making them also as distinct as possible, that's really the key. And having them in different locations. So our memory works a lot that we're placing things in time and it's...
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Space, and the more distinct you can make that, the better the retention of that information will be, because otherwise it will all merge into one, if that makes sense.
Just on that then, in terms of, you know, making it distinct, maybe I could share an example if you can kind of, you know, clarify I'm on the right path or not. Let's say, for instance, I'm working with a couple of players and they're doing I guess just a passing exercise where they're just passing back and forth. Is it distinct in the sense that I'm going to take them away from passing, or distinct in the sense that the context of which they're passing in is now different?
It can be either. It can be that you put them in a completely different context, for example, where they would have never done this and say, well, I don't know. I'm doing an absurd example now. You know, today we're doing passing on an ice hockey ring. You know, they would think of you as if you're completely crazy, but they will need much more skills to stay, first of all, upright and pass the ball. Or you say, well, today we're not using the normal ball, we're using a different type of ball, whatever you want to use. That changes then the context of it, which might disrupt everything in there, how they're thinking about it, because otherwise it's so automatic. And that's what I mentioned before, especially if they're professionals, they're so proficient. For them, this is all subconscious happening and, you know, this reinforcing this, and that's great. But you want to disrupt this subconscious with the kind of, you know, novelty. And the novelty aspect is by disrupting the context, for example, by changing the ball for the passing or changing the context where they're doing the passing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, for me, yeah, I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, all right, well, I've got a session where, as an example, it's a one-on-one situation, and I'm just looking to maybe get around the player and make a pass. However, if I now shift that to, I guess, maybe a 2v1 situation and have a slightly different context, that's great. But then I'm now conscious about how much time do we spend on each context for, I guess, to maybe potentially maximize the benefit of that. Because if you spend too much time on it, that obviously decreases the engagement factor.
Absolutely. So that's why you need to keep it quite novel, I think, in mixing it up. I think in terms of time range, I wouldn't know. I think that's something you would, you know, you would have to play around with, I think. But all I can tell you from the brain's, you know, receptiveness for novelty, disruption is the key aspect for that. And so that you bring something, a completely different context, which might seem the more absurd, the better, you know. And, you know, saying, I don't know. So you want to disrupt them in terms of that they really start to rethink the whole process they do.
Right.
Now, I'm just, you know, as I said, I'm not a coach, so I don't know how you, but for example, say, I don't know, today you're going to have to wear a wig to do the headers or whatever, something like this, which would be really weird to people.
You're focused to something completely different.
And then exactly.
Back to that.
So exactly.
In some ways, correct me if I'm wrong in my understanding, but what you're saying is if we going down a path, we're leaving the footprint, we're gonna wash it away and then come back to it. And then we're gonna re-cement those footprints, but this time we might get deeper with them.
Exactly. Well, you're not washing them away because they're already in the subconscious for people because they're super proficient. But what happens if once you disrupt it, you switch on these, what I meant, these conscious learning systems in the brain, where people start laughing and then maybe fooling a bit around, but then they take it seriously again. And with that, these conscious elements will then also impact on the subconscious one and will improve them further because it's different contexts you use then. And that makes, again, players should make players more resilient as well towards, you know, having different contexts and not being that it's, you know, the situations that maybe even completely absurd situations in training might prepare them for unusual situations on the pitch and not just the standard training situations, if that makes sense.
No, definitely. I'm just curious then, so how important is it then that you change the context of what you're doing rather than shift their focus to something else? As an example, we're doing an activity, whatever that might be, and we break off and have a conversation about something, or does it have to be an activity per se? Do you get what I mean by that?
Yes, but I think if you do a conversation, and that's a very different kind of, I think it's more reinforcing what you want to teach to people. So there's two different elements, the practical element, and then people do things, and then the theoretical element where you teach them on a board or whatever. And you should always use them in both because they both will integrate very well. But what I meant more is kind of you can change the context of either the practical or the theoretical situation. You see what I mean? And that will really kind of more reinforce the learning, actually what people need to do. So for the practical one, as I said, create a different context, or for the theoretical one that, you know, today you use other examples which people would not assume, and then they start thinking deeper about this, and it will again will inform that. So I think that's why I wouldn't say these are kind of, you know, is a healthy brain. It's really key. Cardiovascular health is absolutely key, very, very important with, you know, being as physically active as possible with very little sedentary behavior. And as well, having good nutrition, you know, and everybody knows this, don't smoke, don't drink too much alcohol, have a really healthy, balanced diet. It will make all the difference, especially if you go, of course, towards more the professionals, where all this is about very, very small margins. But even if you're just an amateur sport person, this will make a huge, huge difference to how you actually will perform. And that is really key in terms of your brain fitness. For your psychological well-being, try to be as resilient as possible. So being anxious and depressed is terrible for the brain and will impact, of course, your performance, but also it will really have a bad impact on your brain fitness. And really try to foster this kind of resilience, which is absolutely key, you know, that we are becoming much more resilient in our mental health. And I've mentioned, you know, I mentioned this always in all my talks, this is a particular for men and middle-aged men, the key aspect. Because people very often are not aware that, for example, in the UK, the suicide rate is the highest for middle-aged men. And very often we're not taking into, you know, our mental health too serious. And that's a really key element to be aware of that. Talk to your mates or seek help. I think that would make a big, big difference for lots of people already.
Oh, brilliant. And you can just say, obviously, linking into some of the stuff that you've done in terms of your research here, which is dementia. You know, what are some of the biggest risks for people in general, but more specifically in the athlete world, in terms of falling into a risk of having dementia? What are some of the challenges that people face on a day to day? Obviously, you've mentioned earlier the idea of being active is obviously going to play a heavily key role in maintaining the health and fitness of the brain. How does that lend itself to now this whole concept of dementia?
Yeah, I think we know. So when people think of dementia, they always think of old people, and majority of people with dementia, of course, are old. But I think what we think today is that, you know, dementia is a disease of middle age presenting at old age. And what I mean with that is that the first processes in the brain for dementia actually very often start in middle age already. And you can see that people might not have symptoms until very, you know, much later in their life, but their brain starts to change in middle age. And therefore, that's where we need to make changes to our life and our lifestyle. And the key is to stay as healthy as possible as you can. And again, being physically active. So just being physically active reduces your risk of dementia by 30%. It's incredible. But of course, you know, that's what the less we do, the older we get. It's the classic. It's this completely bizarre situation that once we hit middle age and have children, our very busy lifestyles, the less we move. And that's actually when we need it the most. And also the older we get. It's not going crazy. And, you know, there's the whole midlife crisis aspect to it. So I don't want people going out there running crazy marathons. It's again, just living a physically active life. And that's really important. In terms of sport, well, you know, the key aspect for sport, and there's been, of course, a lot of news on this, is what we call concussion. So when people have concussion, and that's, of course, in sport now, it's such a big, big topic. Yeah. And fans of sports which have very common concussion symptoms, and of course the classics for this are, for example, rugby, are also ice hockey. It's very, you know, not so big in the UK, but like in the US and Canada, it's a very, very big topic. The same for American football, of course, in the US, again, very, very big topic, concussions. But it has now, of course, come over here in terms of football and heading the football. Now, heading the football is not necessarily concussion. So you have sometimes in football, of course, when two players collide, and, you know, we had recently this very bad incident, of course, was it at Arsenal Wolves game, wasn't it, where two players really had a very bad concussion. And this was really, it's quite rare, thankfully. But what's, and in those situations, really clearly players need to be checked. But for sport, if you have what we call a subconcussive syndrome, so this is, for example, heading the ball repeatedly, this can also make brain changes to your brain. Mm. Now, what changes are these? Oh, sorry, the final one I forgot, of course, the obvious one is boxing. You know, if you do boxing, you will have a lot of concussion. It's that's the nature of the sport, obviously. So, you know, being protected for that is key. But so what is happening in concussion? And in concussion, basically what happens is the brain, you have to imagine, sits in the head in kind of like a bubble of fluid to protect it. So when we move around, that the brain doesn't bounce against the skull all the time. So it's like in a fluid, you know, kind of floating about. Mm. What happens in a concussion is that you have an impact on your head from either direction, which is so hard that this fluid, which kind of cushions the brain, is not sufficient, and the brain really hits the side of the skull. And that can cause, that happens. So it can happen to every one of us from time to time. But what happens in the brain, it creates a kind of small damage to the brain. And it creates what we call an inflammatory process in the brain. And the inflammation is just a sign that the brain wants to heal itself, and it's a perfect normal process. But if you have this inflammation happening repeatedly, so people have repeated concussions or these subconcussions, then it can really, the immune system can go into what we call like an overdrive and can actually start to damage the brain. And that's when really the problems start then. So people can really start brain symptoms. And the other problem is if you have the first beginnings of dementia, the neuroinflammation can fan the fire of this. So then the dementia really comes rapidly on for people. So for sports people, that's a key aspect to understand in terms of, especially concussion side is a really, really risk factor for having later on poorer brain health or even developing dementia.
You make some great points there. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things, you're right, it has become a massive thing in sport over recent years. I think it's always been a big thing, but maybe not appreciated how severe it can be, how severe the effects of, you know, these things can be. But obviously, you know, we've seen some unfortunate things over the last few years where people have had long-lasting damage, shall we say, because of a different situation, not just in football specifically, but as you mentioned, the other sports as well. So I guess, you know, from a, you know, without the obvious, don't take a knock on the head. Don't go and headbutt anything. And, you know, I guess wear a helmet. What are some of the, you know, I guess simple things that people could be considering to kind of just take a bit more care on that aspect of things? And more specifically, if we're working with young people, and obviously, you know, some of the things that started that happened with young people, because obviously that's where it all starts. And as you said, it's something that is generally seen with older people. However, it probably surfaces itself a lot earlier than that, or rather takes, it plants its seed a lot earlier than that and has a long-term impact later down the line.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that then, from a just a general standpoint, you know, this is sport related and outside of the sport, that we can start to think about doing to kind of steer away from the potential risks of it? Especially if you've got young, and I'm talking young, you know, maybe 5, 10, 11, 12 year olds.
Yeah, I think brain development is another aspect. So you have to think about this. So our brains usually develop from childhood until we are in our 20s. So I'm afraid if you're past your mid-20s, you're past your brain peak. So I'm long past my brain peak. That's how it is. And during that time, our brain still develops, not necessarily creating more nerve cells, but also pruning, becoming more efficient. And that's why people usually are, you know, in the end teens, beginning 20s, they have their peak brain power, we would call this. So if you disrupt this, of course, in sport, if people have head injuries, this can have quite long lasting impact. And as you say, it really has life course implications. So one needs to be quite careful. For example, the Scottish FA, of course, has already banned now heading balls for under 12s because of that, which is huge. And you might think, well, is this really justified? Because it might actually change the whole game. If you can't train the young people in heading the ball, who will be a good head, you know, ball header in the future? And this is a discussion to be had, which I don't know. All I can tell you is from the brain side is that these can have really kind of long-term impact. However, for children, or let's say for younger adults, we are much more resilient and the brain is so still pruning itself. We are, the brain regenerates much quicker. It's therefore more an issue once you hit this middle age, because in middle age, our regeneration of our brain cells becomes slows down. And once we have then issues still happening at that time, then it has a much, much bigger impact on how we age then actually. So for children, the impact is still not known. There is very young, very likely one shouldn't, you know, one needs to be very careful, but especially in teens, it might not have to be, you know, as careful. Now, what can you practically do is very, very hard. As you say, for some sports, it's impossible. If we talk about, for example, boxing, how can you do boxing without, you know, hitting your opponent's head? It's really just how do you determine whether these kind of, for example, in the training, how severe the impact is. I think that's a lot of technology will come to that. And in football as well, I think heading the ball maybe there are different new techniques one can develop, which are less impactful on the brain. But I think heading the ball might be not so much the issue as having a proper concussion, as I said. So it's for the high risk, really for the high risk concussion sports, where it's much more an issue, like rugby, like American football, like boxing. And football, one just needs to be very, very careful about that. One should not let players go on playing if they had such an episode. It's really, even if they don't have any symptoms, you need to be very, very careful that they recover properly. And that's why, of course, we have now the concussion substitutes in the Premier League, which is, I think, a fantastic thing.
I think it was used for the first time recently, a couple of days ago.
Exactly. Just been used. And for me, it's absolutely fantastic. But I can see that lots of sport purists might say this, it changes the nature of the game. So this is a discussion to be had. From the brain perspective, it's really just be very careful, especially with youngsters, where they very often can be, of course, very, you know, active and So I have, for example, I have four nephews, all crazy about football, you know, and they're all between 5 and 18. And they are very rough how they play, obviously, you know. So one just needs to be quite careful to teach them right from the beginning what's really that they should really protect the head. That's the key aspect. Other things might heal much better, but the head is really the most precious resource.
No, definitely. I totally can see that. Mark, I'm just conscious of time. You know, I'm sure, you know, the listeners as well as I have, you know, I've taken away some fantastic elements from this conversation and picked up some really key things for me to consider in terms of the way I guess not just work with my athletes, but even take care of my own brain.
Absolutely, please do.
I want to thank you again for your time. You know, just if there was any listeners that did have any questions that they kind of wanted to maybe touch base on with you, either off the back of what you said in this conversation or beyond, what would you, where could they get in touch with you to do that?
Yes, you know, very happy for them to email me directly on, you know, and I'm not sure you can put that on your website, my email address. I'm very happy. I also have my own kind of blog, which is more on dementia science, but you can find dementiascience.org, and also I'm on Twitter and Facebook. I think I'm too old for Instagram. I still haven't figured that out. So there you go. Or TikTok has passed me, long past me. But if you want to get in touch, please do. I'd love to discuss this. You know, I'm a big sports fan, love football. As you can hear, I'm German by background, which is creates always an interesting situation during a football World Cup in England. So it's a great way. Very happy to help and talk to people and help them in terms of if I can help you with brain health or brain from a brain perspective to give you any input.
Excellent. You know, just on that note, you kind of maybe touched on it a little bit there, but you know, one question I do have for all the guests that do come on the show, it's this, you know, you've just by having this conversation with me, you know, you've made yourself part of this coach's network. So what's one message that you'd want to kind of leave with everyone else?
Well, for me, I think, you know, a healthy heart is a healthy brain is the key message. If you wanted to just have that, I think that's really absolute key for people. And not only if you're younger, but if you're middle-aged and older. And if you can encourage your, you know, if you're younger and you encourage your parents to be more active, that's great. I still try with my dad and he's not very receptive. So I know from my own experience, this can be a very interesting conversation.
Brilliant. And just on a final note, just want to say thank you again for your time. You know, very much appreciate it. I'm sure, like I said, the listeners have probably taken away a lot from this as I have, and I'm sure they will be in touch if they've got any further questions. Thank you again, Michael.
Please do. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.